Hello and welcome back to another special episode of Scottish Football Covered. I think it's episode 16. We're up to it already since we've rebranded, and what a weekend. We're going to dive into 25 goals across all games in the Scottish Premiership this weekend. And what a better place to recap it than here on Scottish Football Covered. I'm joined by Finlay and Robbie. First off, Finlay, how are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm all kind of petered out from the pre kind of podcast chat, but you kind of sprung me back into life with that 25 goals. I've just remembered how exciting that weekend was, apart from one or two games.
Yeah, off air we were talking about some films and everything else, and we almost forgot we've actually got a podcast to be getting on with. So if you've got any film recommendations, let us know. But certainly I'm joined by Robbie. Robbie, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. It's been a relatively long Monday, but I got my cup of tea and we talked about war films, so I'm feeling pretty good about life.
And I think some of us have get the Monday blues. Maybe after this one we'll all meet up and we'll watch a wee film. But we'll just dive right in. The reigning champions Celtic, they beat Hearts 3-0. Dizemite Ada, the man everybody's talking about right now, scored a double, and January signing Jota got another goal. Since he's not been in with a goal since he returned, but that was another one. I think that's his second or third at Celtic Park since he came back. Look, it was a big win for Celtic. They're closing in on the title. It's a matter of when, not if, taking off the dates, getting closer to championship number 4 in a row. They needed a big performance after the humbling defeat to Rangers, didn't they, Finlay?
Absolutely. And I think what was very kind of telling was the way that Brendan Rodgers, I think, referenced Rangers about 6 or 7 times. And I don't remember him saying Hearts more than once or twice. It shows the extent to which that's kind of stuck in the psyche and will be until the end of the season. I don't think it matters necessarily if they win the next one. That game was a bit such a downer for the team. And it looked a bit like that performance there. It got all the things I think he wanted, like a reaction, clean sheet, few goals. I still feel like maybe that wasn't the best Celtic. I think they didn't really leave. I'll give them third gear. I think there's a lot more to come, because otherwise there's a risk they start to peter out before the end of the season. It could be a very big anticlimax, despite, you know, obviously that run to the title, which looks pretty conclusive.
Yeah, no, Brendan Rodgers obviously is a guy, I think, in his first spell, he'd only lost once to Rangers over the course of like 3 seasons. And then, look, he's lost 2 in a row, so he's definitely out of his comfort zone for a wee bit. Speaking of that Rangers game, though, I think the way Neil Critchley set up his heart side, it was very similar to the way Rangers played. They played high, but I wouldn't say what differed from the Hearts in the Rangers game was Hearts never pressed with the same sort of aggression that Rangers did. Maybe that's just because of the nature of the fixture. But Robbie, what I noticed from watching the game, Celtic looked a lot more comfortable playing out for that press at Hearts. Do you think it's like, I don't want to say a mentality issue, because I don't think the mentality of the Celtic team can be questioned, but do you think they play better perhaps when the pressure's on? Because you've seen them at the end of the tail end of last season when it came down to it, they got the results and Rangers never, and they won the title. See, now that the pressure's been off, and it's been off for quite a few weeks, and they've lost the last 2, do you think that's played an impact in the results against Rangers, perhaps?
I think potentially, yeah. I think there's always kind of a risk of taking your foot off the gas a little bit when you're so far in front. Obviously, they'll be thinking about keeping players fit, not trying to kind of wear themselves out too much, because they don't necessarily need to. But yeah, I think it does kind of, it puts a little bit of a dampener on it, I suppose. Like Finlay's just said, it makes the end of the season a little bit less exciting if they do carry on like this. Obviously, you know, Celtic are Celtic and they are still brilliant, and they, you know, they came out and still ended up winning 3-0, but they didn't look as explosive as they maybe would have done, you know, earlier on in the season when things were a little bit tighter.
No, absolutely. I think they do perform a lot better when push comes to shove, and I think the difference between them and Rangers is Rangers perhaps don't. And obviously we're going to get into their match in a minute, but I think It's historically speaking, in the last few seasons, Rangers haven't quite performed under the pressure to the same extent Celtic have. But more about the game against Hearts rather than the ones against Rangers. It's seen a league debut for new summer signing Finnish goalkeeper Vinny Sinisalo. He also replaced Kasper Schmeichel, who picked up an injury on international duty for Denmark. One thing I noticed about Sinisalo, it might just be because he's a lot younger than Schmeichel. He just looked a lot more comfortable, I think, with the ball at his feet. But what I would say was Schmeichel's still better with the ball at his feet, if that makes sense. But obviously, I think just Sinisalo's been coached that way coming up just because of the way the goalkeeping position's changed. Finlay, I'm going to ask you. I know, obviously, we've said the league's more or less wrapped up, but it's a big opportunity for Sinisalo to stake his claim for the Kasper Schmeichel's position, because I think the contingency plan seemed to be both of them were signed at the same time. We'll have 1 year of Kasper Schmeichel, then he'll pass the reins on to Sinisalo. Obviously, Schmeichel signed the extension, but do you think Sinisalo will be using this as an opportunity to go, well, we don't actually need Schmeichel next year?
I don't see that happening. I don't think it really matters how well he performs from here until the end of the year. The first thing I would say is Schmeichel has always come up trumps in what you would call, if I'm more American, clutch moments. So the big games, Schmeichel can be relied upon. Everyone knows he's got that wealth of experience. Sinisalo, between now and the end of the season, the Scottish Cup should be won anyway. There are no kind of major opponents. There are no Champions League games either. So even if they win the treble and he's there for the rest of the season, I still don't think he has that opportunity to showcase why he should be the number one. The second thing is, I still think Schmeichel is Brendan Rodgers' man. I think he's not even done anything wrong whilst he was fit. So I don't think there's a reason for him to change. If I was Sinisalo, I would maybe be thinking about a loan move elsewhere next year because there is a keeper there. It would just be a shame. This is one of my biggest bugbears in football is people who are happy to sit on the bench, and that applies to keepers as well at a young age. Your Scott Carsons of the world are important, but Kelleher, that kind of trying to wait someone out when it's kind of not really going to happen. I think he would be better off showing why he's a good keeper, but actually facing shots because you'll face maybe one or two shots per game for the rest of the season. I know that's hyperbole, but if that makes sense, you know.
No, I agree with what you're saying. Sort of, especially young goalkeepers should probably have a bit more ambition in their career. You touched on Kelleher. Look, Sinisalo was an international pro, and he was Exeter's player of the season when he had a loan spell there. So I think there's got to have been some sort of, what's the word? Has been assured, I think, that game time is probably going to come to him at some point. Obviously, this is through no fault of anyone's that he's starting the next few games. But for a promising goalkeeper, you wouldn't want to sacrifice your career sitting on a bench. But look, that's what he's been doing for most of the season. Would have been without a freak injury to Kasper Schmeichel. But moving on from the goalkeeping position, we're going to move to the other end of the park. You can't really talk about Celtic at the minute without top mentioning this man, Dias Maeda. 2 goals today, could have been more. I don't know if you saw his post-match interview. I don't know if it kind of just got lost in translation or not, but he says, basically said, I scored two this game and I'll score a hat-trick the next. So the confidence is absolutely flying from Dias Maeda. And look, he scored 30 goals this season. For context, Kyogo Furuhashi's best scoring season at Celtic was 34 goals. Dias Maeda, who's been playing largely on the left hand side of Kyogo this season, is sitting on 30. Robbie, Brendan Rodgers was talking about in the press this week that there's, and the story's going to get leaked, that there's a new contract on the table. How important is it for Celtic to have Dias Maeda at this, arguably the prime of his career?
Really, really important. I think you've got to give a lot of credit to Maeda because I think everyone kind of thought losing Kyogo mid-season was a bit of a risky move in the sense that Kyogo was so reliable for goals, and then you've got Adam Eder behind there who does score goals but not at the same level, and Maeda is just like you say, he started off on the left for the majority of the first half of the season, but he's just slotted into that centre forward role absolutely brilliantly. And he's just been fantastic, hasn't he? I mean, you know, the two goals yesterday were just, it was just completely kind of, it was exactly how he's been playing all season. Those finishes, just so calm, so composed. So yeah, I think it would be silly not to put a contract on the table for him. You know, even if it was 2 years, you know, a year, 2 years, just get it done, because he's in the form of his life. And you know, when you're on the back of a 30 goal season, it's not then a decision to then force him out of the team, I suppose.
No, you've hit some of the buzzwords there with composure. These are things we would never have considered with Eisenman either, even like a couple of years ago. So that's just been the difference that he's made to his game, just adding those qualities, and then that's what's made him so reliable for Celtic, because they're ever present in that Celtic team now. But from one contract to another, left back Greg Taylor, Brendan Rodgers also says it's like more likely than not that he'll be moving on in the summer. He's probably he served Celtic with some distinction, but I think his replacement's ready made. And I think he was on that Celtic Park pitch, probably Jeffrey Schlupp. But also, there's a shout, there's been rumours for James Penrice, who was in the Hearts team. Finlay, he was rumoured to be maybe making a Scotland cap, but he's just so unlucky. I think any other generation who might have been in that Scotland team, but he's never going to get a game ahead of Robertson or Tierney at this current moment in time. Where do you see James Penrice's future line?
To be honest, I think he could get that move up to, respectfully, I say up to Celtic or Rangers. His progression has been so impressive. And I think sometimes people are happy to just have a player who is an excellent defender or does the job well. He's actually technically a very good player. And I think that would suit other clubs with kind of more expansive ambitions. Although that Hearts will want to play that kind of football, I think Penrice could do a job. And you referenced Greg Taylor. I think Greg Taylor has struggled for that very reason. I think Greg Taylor is a good player, but you can tell with the signings that Brendan Rodgers made is that he was after an upgrade. And so it's not, I mean, he's not going to go to Celtic, but I think maybe James Penrice could find himself maybe playing for Rangers or a kind of, like I use the word, progressive club in England or somewhere else. But very excited to see him play for Scotland. And given the injury rates of the fullbacks at the moment, I think it won't be long before he's in that squad.
No, absolutely. I know Steve Clarke's no stranger to picking domestic-based players, but I think for Penrice to seriously challenge for a somewhat regular spot that we've seen Greg Taylor have in the Scotland setup, he probably does need to make that move, as you said, probably to Rangers or more than likely the English Championship. I think any lower than that, he'd be doing himself a disservice, because he's been brilliant this season, probably going to be in the team of the year. But speaking of his team, Hearts, their next game gets even more important. They're up against Dundee United. It's a big 6-pointer in the sense where the 3 points takes them close to Dundee United, who are, I think, fifth at the minute. Whereas if they don't get the 3 points, the top six are just going to race away from them. It's big. I think they'll be kicking themselves with the start of the season. Look, they're a completely different team to that Stephen Naismith team at the start of the season. And their European ambitions are starting to fade slightly, but look, that just makes the spot even more beautiful. And we've got a great game week 32 coming up next week. But moving on from the mid table, we're going to go back up to the top, where current second place Rangers, they travelled up north to Dundee, and I think we're all going to be unanimous to say this is probably game of the week. 4-3 to Rangers. Simon Murray opened the score in 2 minutes before centre back Joe Shaughnessy made it two, before adding himself to a long list of players who scored at one end and to what scored at one end and then scored at the other. He scored an own goal to give Rangers one back before half time. Scott Tiffany restored the 2-goal cushion for Dundee. I don't know about yous. Anytime I talk about Scott Tiffany, I just think of that announcement video when he signed for Partick Thistle, and Ian McCall makes a reference to Breakfast at Tiffany's. If you've not seen it, you'll be like, what the hell is he talking about? But that's anytime I think of him, I always think of that video. But then captain for Rangers, James Tavernier, and then Tom Lawrence pulled at Rangers level before the man who only needs 12 chances at goal, Cyril Dessers, scored in the 90th minute. Look, Finn, we'll go to you, Robbie. This is since Barry Ferguson came in, Rangers have fallen behind by 2 goals in 5 of his 7 games, but they have still, this is the second one that they've won. Do you think it's a cause for concern? I think Barry Ferguson will obviously be concerned, but do you think it's concerning, or is it more of a case that they wouldn't have won these games at all under the previous manager?
I think it's concerning more than anything else because Rangers shouldn't be conceding 3 goals against Dundee, who have currently sat in 11th place and not doing very well at all this season. Even though they got the points, the 3 points, it's just kind of it says it all about Rangers' season this season. They just haven't been good enough at all defensively, and they just don't look quite at it. It's, in my opinion, I think really there needs to be a lot of work done in the summer, and potentially with also bringing in an actual manager as well. Otherwise, I can see them really struggling to keep up with Celtic over the next couple of years. Because you look at how Celtic are playing and have played this season. Yes, Celtic have maybe not played the best in the past few games. They still comfortably drove to a 3-0 win. You just can't see kind of Rangers keeping up with that at the moment. And that's why I think it is a cause for concern because they need to iron these silly goals and bad defending out of their game if they want to properly compete again.
No, yeah, I don't want to be all negative about Rangers because ultimately it's a absolutely fantastic comeback from being down and out with 50 minutes ago. It's just such a brilliant game. Even at 3-each, Dundee had they hit the post just like a minute before Cyril Dessers got the winner. Speaking of Cyril Dessers, Finlay, I'm going to talk about him. He obviously got the winner. He'll get the headlines, but 9 shots on target and 3 off target in that game. And look, it's testament to his character to keep going. He doesn't shy away, but surely it comes to a point where you're like, we can't afford to start you because you're not going to get 12 chances every game. You know what I mean?
No, that's true. And it's not always the case that he takes 12 chances. The one thing I would say, 12, the 9 shots, that is absolutely ridiculous. I can't really understand that. Should have scored a lot sooner. The one thing I would say in his defense is that at 2-0 down, and when he scored the first time and it was ruled out, the way, I mean, these are cliches, but his kind of reaction was exactly what Rangers should have had the rest of the team. I think his ability to kind of come back from obstacles is so impressive. If not his kind of strike rate in front of goal, that's maybe less shiny. But I think just the way he carries himself and the way he recovers from the setbacks that I've talked about, I think it's exactly what Rangers need. They don't have a striker at the moment. Eggemann is going to be hot and cold because he's young. But to keep going, even though things were not going his way, he never gave up. 93rd minute scored the winner. He is not going to be Rangers' first choice forever, nor should he be. But I think he should be appreciated not just in terms of his output, which again is over 20 goals, and I think could hit 30 by the end of the season, but also because of the character that's been missing from most of these players. And I think that will be a boost for those around him. And there are some players in that side who, despite a massive clear out coming, I think should remain with the club. And he is one of them because having that kind of rotational option is invaluable. But I think he deserves a lot of credit. He scored in nearly half the games he's played. And yeah, he scored the winner here. So I think I'll give him a day off.
No, I think you're right. His record is an absolute joke for Rangers. After this century, he's fourth in the list, like to reach. No, I beg your pardon. After 100 appearances, he scored 45 goals, and that is the fourth most this century for any Rangers player, only after Chris Boyd, Alfredo Morelos, and Shota Arvaladze. Obviously, I've absolutely butchered that name. But whilst I've still got to Finlay, I've talked about Dessers, I've got to go to the other end of the park. Jack Butland made another mistake. It's a bit uncharacteristic of him. The Jack Butland that we know from last season. It's becoming, he's got a bit of a catalogue this season, and obviously it's not just ones that contribute to goals. He made that rash decision to give away a penalty away to St Mirren, made that rash decision to knock out Robin Proper away to Fenerbahce. But you obviously don't know the answer to this, but what is up with him at the minute? Look, this is a guy who looked like he might be in Gareth Southgate's Euro squad. Look, what do you think is the underlying issue?
It's just a confidence thing. It seriously is just that massive cup final mistake. Maybe people deny this, maybe he denied himself. I think it's stuck with him. And I think every time he's made an error, it's compounded. And you're right, he was kind of being talked about in the English media as a future member of that England squad, a return. But I think these mistakes that we're seeing creeping up, people forget how Jack Butland ended up at Rangers. And for those of you who remember what a play he was with Birmingham and then Stoke. Stoke got relegated, and everyone expected Jack Butland to be one of the players because he did stay to help bring them back up. And instead, Jack Butland got worse and worse at Stoke. And after that, and forgive me if I'm forgetting any clubs, he bounced around. He played a bit at Palace, bench warmed, or even played third keeper at Man United. I think he's got a medal from that. Fair play. But his career was ever so slightly spiraling out, and I think as a name, he was just becoming a risk of just becoming totally forgotten. And Rangers that season last year was a surprise to everyone, even the people who signed him. I think even Rangers must have thought, well, we've made some coup. But I think what Jack Butland has shown is that difficulty that maybe actually we talked about with Dessers to recover from big moments and these little failures that have blighted him. I think he just doesn't necessarily have that quick recovery that is among the elite of the elite in keepers.
No, that's some good points, and I think Barry Ferguson, if he takes the gig full time, if he gets offered the gig full time, first and foremost, he's going to have a lot of decisions to make about that squad. The only thing I would say about Barry Ferguson and being here next season is careful for Rangers not to fall into that trap that they've made under Van Bronckhorst, Michael Beale, and Philippe Clement, where they have this, such a promising start and then it becomes a bit of a train wreck. But we're going to move on to the opponents, Dundee. They'll feel hard done by. I think the XG stats, if you believe in that, showed that they'd created more opportunities than Rangers. I think only by 0.4 though. And then scoring three goals at home, you probably, and being ahead by two goals on two occasions, you probably shouldn't be losing ultimately. But Robbie, my question to you is, this another performance from Dundee against Rangers. They obviously had that 3-3 draw against Celtic where they nearly won. It was a 90-minute penalty that evened the scores. And then they've just absolutely thumped Dundee United away. Already a top six side. As push comes to shove in the battle for the relegation playoff, do you think this Dundee team is going to struggle for motivation against like the bottom six sides? Do you think it is they are more fired up for the games against the so-called bigger teams?
I think there's an element of that, definitely, but I think you would hope, although there's probably going to be, they are probably going to be a little bit knocked in confidence after that result at the weekend, but you would hope that they would maybe look at the way that they actually played for large parts of that game and think, we can take it to the other side here, because there is only one point between them and Kilmarnock are in the worst form of the league currently over the last five or six games, I think. So there is an opportunity for them to jump out of that 11th place. They've got St Mirren next, to will also be bang up for that, looking for a spot in the top six. But when you play like that and score three goals against Rangers, there's no reason to suggest that they can't go and get a decent result at home to St Mirren. So I think, yeah, that I would say personally that I think that they will probably be bang up for it against St Mirren, and then against Hibs, like you say, they like to perform against teams that are doing well. So you would think maybe against Hibs, but then again, Hibs are in ridiculous form at the moment, so possibly not.
I think Dundee will be more than safe if they fall into that playoff spot, as long as this Dundee that turns up, this like the that we've seen against Celtic and Rangers at home this season. I really like Simon Murray. I said my controversy take last week was he might be being overlooked for the Scotland team on form this season, and then the boy Adewumi on loan from Burnley, he's looked exciting than anything I've watched him. But Robbie, you touched on Kilmarnock. We're going to go talk about their game just now. Kelly fans, turn your radio sets off now. It was St Mirren 5, Kilmarnock 1. St Mirren, for context, haven't scored 5 at home since 2012. The PA must have had the dust of cobwebs off the button that plays Hawaii 5-0. That was what was playing when they scored the 5th. But Boyd Munce scored the opener, then it was within 10 minutes they were 2-0 down. It was Roland Dadu. And for the suspended Olasanya, who scored a penalty, Boyd Munce again scored before O'Hara and Declan John completed the rout, with Bruce Anderson scoring a consolation penalty at the end. This is usually a place where Kilmarnock get a result. They've not lost to St Mirren in 11 games. But my gripe, if I was a Kilmarnock fan, would be Boyd Munce's first goal, Finlay, and Mark O'Hara's goal for the 4th. So these are like goals that are like, what, an hour apart, maybe. It's effectively the same goal. They take like 3 touches and it just kind of rolls through the box into the bottom corner. Goalkeeper's got to be doing better. He's got to be getting pressed. I've said before, Derek McInnes has probably hit a ceiling with a squad last season with the European finish. But at what point do we start pointing the finger at the players? They've got to be doing better. Conceding the same type of goal twice and an absolute doing is terrible, surely, no?
No, you're absolutely right, and it's. I think what's worrying for fans is that that's not the kind of goal that Kilmarnock concede, and last season they wouldn't have conceded like that. So that points to something else, and it is, I believe, a little bit of a washed-up squad. And I think Derek McInnes has come to the end of his tether with it. And he was almost going as far as to say that he thought that Robbie McCrory was like absolutely terrible, almost pointing the finger. But it was just such a bad performance from them. I don't even think St Mirren played that well. It was almost like everything they touched turned to gold, and Kilmarnock just did not turn up. They are one of those squads that will look amongst themselves and think, we're too good to go down. I know players don't usually say that, but most people will think that. They've been down before, but I don't know. I kind of trust them in the split to kind of get away from this, but they could be in a little bit of bother here if Dundee get their act together. And the one thing I will say is it's been, like you mentioned, the Hawaii 5-0, a very nice weekend, I think, for musical numbers. I really enjoyed that. Obviously, you will rarely hear that at St Mirren, but the other one from the previous game was the Tequila rendition, but with Maida. And I know that's not a new one necessarily, but it makes me laugh, and it makes it kind of worth watching these games sometimes, just a little bit of extra.
No, I love it as well. We need variety for goal music. I think Celtic Park's really good for it. I think Ibrox as well. And with more and more football chants being so creative based off songs that are on the radio, it happens more and more. But anyway, back to the stuff on the pitch. This was a St Mirren side, as I mentioned, they were without Olasanya, and then Mikael Mandron was on the bench coming back from injury, who I'm a big fan of Mikael Mandron. The assistant manager, Brian Keart, says these performances have been with St Mirren for the last 7 8 weeks. The results just haven't accompanied them, which I think is doing themselves a bit of a disservice, because obviously they got bit of a doing off Celtic, but they were right in the game up to the very end, won at Ibrox, and then probably should have won, but away to Firth Park when there were 2 goals ahead. But look, Robbie, going out of the last game before the split, last 2 games before the split, it is a serious possibility for St Mirren to get into that top six. And then on the other, I'm going to throw you 2 questions for the price of one. How do you rate Kilmarnock's chances of survival? Quite simply.
Well, I mean, first of all, I agree. I think St Mirren, they absolutely have a big chance to finish in the top six. They've got Dundee and then Ross County, both teams not playing that well. Both games very much winnable. While Hearts have got a couple of tricky fixtures in there that, you know, they're maybe not absolute massive ones like your Celtics or your Hibs or your Rangers, but they could prove to be banana skins, those fixtures. So there is definitely a potential for St Mirren to go and nick that with 2 games to go, because like you say, they have been in very good form. You know, they've scored twice against Celtic, they scored against Hearts, they've managed to hold Hibs to a draw, who are absolutely flying at the moment. So the confidence has got to be absolutely sky high in that dressing room. On the other hand, Kilmarnock, I think the confidence is absolutely rock bottom at the moment. They've got the worst form in the league over 5 games. They've also got the worst away form in the league over I think, the entire season. They've only got 9 points away from home, and that's something that has clearly really hurt them this year. Like I say, Dundee, like I previously said as well, Dundee, there's potential for them to maybe pick up a point here or there, which, you know, if Kilmarnock don't win the next 2 games, could prove very costly for them. So if they do fall into that 11th place spot, I think there is a real potential that they could end up then losing the playoff and going down.
No, absolutely. You touched on home form. I think Derek McInnes says how important the home form is when you're at that end of the table. I'd need to check. I don't know if Kilmarnock are due 2 or 3 games at home this split, but I generally think if it's 2 or 3 home games at post-split, that could be the difference between 11th and 10th. It's such a. You see that Dundee, I think they're really good at home. I think Kilmarnock usually are really good at home, but when confidence is then less, look, home form kind of goes out the window, doesn't it? Talking about Derek McInnes there, we're going to go and report on one of his former clubs, Aberdeen, where he enjoyed a fruitful spell. They beat Motherwell 4-1. It was Michael Vimmer's first defeat since his first game as Motherwell manager, but it was his side that took the lead. Callum Slattery scored from close range. He scored twice last week as well in that game I mentioned against St Mirren. Before Spurs loanee Alfie Dorrington scored the equaliser through a deflection. Hopefully Archie was watching that, because Tottenham haven't been doing much scoring as late, but still we've got a Tottenham player scoring. Poor Archie catches stays even when he's not on. But he'll be back. He'll be back though. Aberdeen took the lead before half time, late in Clarkson, and then in the last quarter of an hour of the game, Kevin Nisbet scored a double to make it 4-1. Finally, it was a much more assured performance from Aberdeen. I thought, Av says, even when they were on that long unbeaten run, they never really looked that convincing. But it was the first time they came from behind to win a game since October, and arguably it's their best performance since with that run I mentioned as well. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. There were moments, I'll give them credit, where they did actually look very convincing during that run. Like, they ran Rangers ragged, and there were games where they looked like a cut above, in the same kind of way that when Celtic played Hearts, Celtic just looked that much better quality-wise, and I think Aberdeen had that in the game. So it looks a bit more of the old version of themselves. And I was impressed with them. I think it's nice that they're finally having a striker come into form. Kevin Nisbet is not going to be Bojan Miłoski, but at least if there's a player who can get 10 goals a season, that is a massive boost. The other thing I would say is Papa Gueye probably should have got a red card for that tackle. Not being funny, that was a little bit reckless. I think fortunate to stay on the pitch. And the third and final thought, I would say those signings are really coming together. Lynn Clarkson already at the club. But that raft of kind of January additions, I think they've done really well. I think they steadied the ship, like having Alfie Dorrington there as a young player, but it looks like they thought about it and they didn't bring in players for the sake of it. They just knew something was fundamentally wrong with that squad. And I think Jamie Tillin has done incredibly well in bringing players back to confidence, which is an incredibly difficult thing to do considering how badly they were doing in the winter. So full credit for that performance. And Motherwell, they'll have better days. I think Michael Vimmer, when maybe we'll talk about this more, pointed at a kind of giving up in the final 15 minutes because that scoreline could have been a lot closer and a lot more flattering. But they will definitely have better days, and I think they are going to be just seeing the season out in the bottom six as Vimmer works out who's going to stay and kind of how to plan ahead for next year. So expect the foundations being put in place over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I agree. I think both teams are going to look really exciting next season, especially at the start when they've got a pre-season behind them and the whole team's starting to gel, as you touched on with the new signings. Robbie, obviously, yeah, we mentioned a lot of Jimmy Tillin signings, Kevin Nisbet being one of them. That second goal is a screamer. You only try that sort of distance from a goal from distance like that if you're playing with confidence. And it's clear to everybody Kevin Nisbet plays full of confidence and at his best when he's playing in the SPFL. Look, it doesn't really work out for him at Millwall when he isn't really getting the Scotland squad when he's at Millwall. Do you think Kevin Nisbet will be looking to stay at Aberdeen or potentially get a move elsewhere in Scotland after the summer?
I think he will be, yeah, but I think there will also be that decision will not solely be his. I think Millwall will probably have something to say about that because Millwall have struggled with goals from their strikers this season. Aaron Connolly's only got one, and Josh Coburn's got four. Millwall, very often are just kind of a mid to upper mid-table team. But they may well be thinking Kevin Nisbet's actually gone and played in very good form this season. Our strikers aren't doing it. Maybe we want to keep him again. Will that be good for his career? Will he then maybe go into this kind of peaks and troughs kind of thing where he ends up playing well in Scotland, coming back, and then not playing as well again? Possibly, but I think that there will definitely be kind of a there'll be question marks over whether or not Millwall actually want to keep him or not. And I think that will ultimately have quite a profound impact on whether or not he can, really get into the Scotland side.
No, you're absolutely right. It's Millwall's decision at the end of the day. I just think with a potential World Cup on the horizon for Scotland, obviously it's got a long way to go before we even think about qualifying for that. I think it would be in his best interest to stay in Scotland, but ultimately it goes far beyond just his decision. There's a load of other parties involved. But talk about his current clubs. We're going to go visit one of his former clubs at Easter Road. Hibs defeated relegation bound St Johnstone, some would say. Goals from Junior Hoylett, Martin Boyle, and then a late, late penalty from Kieran Bowie, I beg your pardon, gave the Hibs yet another win as they stretch their unbeaten league run to 15 games. The last time they beat them was Celtic, and it was 3-0 on the day at Celtic Park, but it really wasn't a 3-0 game at all if you cast your mind back. Mentioned it's a 15 game unbeaten run, but they're 10 games unbeaten at Easter Road, one of them obviously against Celtic, and they've got Rangers next week. That's going to be a brilliant game. Look, Finlay, I'm going to go to you. We mentioned home form on this podcast, for example. Has making Easter Road such a hard place to visit and such a difficult place to go to, is that perhaps gave Hibs the edge compared to the teams around them? But I know I need to go into a deep dive on the home record to Aberdeen and Dundee United, but it just seems to me that the Hibs are, maybe it's just because he's a good run of form right now, but I think Easter Road is a much more challenging place to go to than Tanna Tawdry at the current moment in time. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think this point here is twofold. And so the first part is to do with support. And I've been going to Easter Road for pretty much the whole season. I would say It feels like every other game I've been there covering it. It wasn't a great place to go, and it was a little bit more empty. But I think since things have started to go well, people have been drawn back into the stadium because there's, they're not just playing well, but there's an expectation or a feeling that there isn't necessarily a limit as to how far this team could go. And that was actually sensed a few games after winning. I think that kind of kicked off when they drew with Aberdeen. There was a real feeling of, oh, maybe this team has a chance. So the support has been great. But then on a more technical level, Easter Road, and if there is someone who wants to correct me, feel free. But I think the Easter Road pitch is a little bit wider, and I think that really suits the kind of Hibs style of play. And so when they go on the road, they might win, but I think you expect a couple more draws. They're much stronger at Easter Road because they can play more expansively, and because teams who want to sit deep and hit them on the counter are tired. That those extra few meters either side, that's a bit of distance. People forget how difficult it is for a player or how tiring it is to cover the extra yards there. And so they are more likely to kind of run rings around teams. I think that's made a difference. But I think David Gray deserves a lot of credit, not just for kind of riding the storm in terms of the criticism and people calling for his job, such as myself, but also because I think he's got the best out of players that people didn't necessarily think had a future at the club.
No, yeah, it goes a lot further, obviously, than the dimensions of the pitch. David Gray deserves all the credit in the world, and the squad as well. Look, they've pulled their socks up and got results that seemed unimaginable at the start of the season. Robbie, just as I mentioned the squad there, the Hibs squad's a bit of a weird one. You've got that continuity from years ago, where Rocco Bashiri's been there a couple of years. Look, Martin Boyle's been there for as long as I can remember a recent time, apart from that short spell in Saudi Arabia. But then you've also got the experienced heads of Junior Hoylett, who was pivotal. He obviously scored the first goal, and then he was pivotal in the second. And then you've got older heads up front, like Dwight Gayle, who comes up with important goals, as the one we've seen at Tynecastle. Is that the perfect way to build a squad, do you think, in this league, where you've got like the continuity of guys like Bashiri and Martin Boyle, and then you've got the sort of experience from international experience from Hoylett and the Premier League experience from Dwight Gayle?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. And there's that kind of famous kind of cliche saying that, you can't win anything with youngsters, which to an extent is true because you definitely need that experience in there. Players like Hoylett, like Gayle, like Boyle, have been there and been in situations like this 100 times before. They are the ones that can pick the youngsters up and go, this is what we need to do here. This is what we need to do here. The experience rubs off on the younger players, and it clearly has made a massive difference. I don't particularly think that necessarily players like Dwight Gayle are that good, and I am still a little bit salty after he scored 2 goals against Liverpool in 2014. But regardless of that, it's not with older players. It's not always about the ability. So, for example, if you look to the England selection recently, they brought Jordan Henderson back into the side. Jordan Henderson, as much as I really do love Jordan Henderson, he is nowhere near good enough to play for England anymore. But that kind of experience and someone who has been there and won it multiple times, you think that's the kind of player you need in there to rub off onto the youngsters. So I do think it's absolutely crucial when you're building a squad, you need to have that kind of leadership in there.
I don't know if he's watched Dwight Gayle's interview with Elton Gould. I know Simon Jordan certainly did, but there was a bit where Dwight Gayle says he was involved in the game against Celtic, and he never knew the words to Sunshine and Leaf. So for the next week, he just listened to Sunshine and Leaf, so he would know it just in case they won against Hearts, and then you can see him singing along after the win against Hearts. He might not be here next season. He's contemplating retirement, but another player who might not be here next season is Rocco Bashiri. I was so surprised when I was doing my research for this week. His contract is out in the summer, and Hibs have offered him a new deal. For me, that's an absolute no-brainer. That is, he's been one of the best players this season, and it's such a wonderful story how he signed for Hibs. But I've said that loads of times. Finally, I'm going to turn my attention to you and St Johnstone. Look, Hibs were bottom of the league 4 months ago. St Johnstone also occupy that spot right now. The performances seem to have kind of took a turn for the better under Vlachery, but it was, I don't want to say pathetic because they're a lot better than what Aber could have done, but it was a lot of schoolboy defending. That's got me worrying at this stage of the season, surely, at this stage under a new regime as well.
No, they were stinking. Like, I was really disappointed. The game itself, though it was 3-0, it was a really bad game. I think St. Johnstone threw in the towel fairly early on. The defending, they step off Højlund and they let him score that goal. Shouldn't happen. Very basic defending. The playing out from the back, it's worked before, but, and I'm a big supporter of the manager and what he's trying to do. But that time, the players, I think they passed back. They passed out half-heartedly. Wasn't impressed at all. The way they kind of let Hibs pick the ball off them, not great. The passing stats, and you look at the graphs, it will show a lot of movement in the final third. But that's because Hibs never pressed them. It's so easy to play out from the back when no one's on you. Hibs were so happy to let them play out. And the minute they sent sort of bad touch, they ran in. And that is a tactic you can date back from all the way back to the beginning of football history, is let them do something. As soon as there's a bad first touch, everyone presses. That's the trigger. And it was just so easy. And I think what was worse was the way the St. Johnstone players were. You could see that they were kind of, some of them were shouting at each other, some of them had their heads down, some of them were jogging. It was really disappointing because on their day, I think they're a good squad. Again, they are bottom of the league, but they can do something. I think the manager also deserves a fair bit of blame for a lack of pragmatism. I can't get, I'm not asking St. Johnstone to send it up the park and put it on Mackenzie Kirk's chest, but at least have some wherewithal to think this isn't working and all it's doing is damaging the player's confidence and it's just going to end badly. So I think Simo Valakari has a lot to learn from that game. Even if he doesn't think he does, there definitely needs something to be done because he's been given a fair bit of leeway this season. And I think by the club too, who are planning for a year in the championship, it looks like. I think they'll keep playing the same way next year, hoping to get back up by being the dominant side. But the way they played, for example, against Livingston, that doesn't look like a team that's going to dominate the championship. So they need to be very careful at this stage. Kind of buck up their ideas and figure out how they can beat teams if things are not going their way and playing the way they want to.
Yeah, a lot of intrigue. Excuse me, surrounding St Johnstone, as they, as you say, they prepare for a season in the second division, in the second tier of Scottish football, I should say. They wrapped up what was a brilliant, brilliant Saturday of Scottish football in the Premiership, at least. And if you expected more of the same of the Sunday, well, you'd be wrong. It was Ross County nil, Dundee United one. It was a second win in the last 8 games for Dundee United. They took all the points from a 75th minute winner from centre half Ross Graham. Excuse me. It's not a game that will live long in the memory, but ultimately you'd have to win pretty. You just have to win if you're Jim Goodwin and Dundee United. Robbie, I'll turn to you. Look, the scoreline didn't reflect the level of performance of Dundee United, but do you think this result of getting a win again, does it take the pressure off Jim Goodwin slightly, or is he, like, I think the question I'm trying to ask is, has he overachieved, has he underachieved? Because obviously he came up from the Championship, but Dundee United are such a massive club, like, is top six enough, or should they really be making further four of their own?
I think they've probably overachieved slightly this season, but I think going forwards, they should probably be looking at, like you say, trying to push into that top three or four. Dundee have been brilliant this year, but I've said this previously on previous podcasts, they've relied too heavily on Sam Dolby's goals. And you could see that again yesterday. They only won by one goal. They had however many shots they had, and they just couldn't seem to find the back of the net. There was sitters galore that were being missed. I just think that if they want to be pushing for that kind of third or fourth place, they maybe need to strengthen a little bit more in certain areas. I think If they can keep Sam Dolby, then absolutely brilliant because he's clearly a top class player. But there's players in there that maybe need to be switched around a little bit because you can't rely on one man to score all your goals. It's just you're just destined to kind of go into that wobbly period because they're not gonna, you know, footballers are humans as well, and they're never ever gonna constantly just score goals every single game.
No, absolutely. I think you're right to say. I think I don't know if I'd use the word overachieved, but I think top six would have definitely been the aim for them this season, and European spots would have been a bonus. But I just think with the peaks and troughs of their form, they'll be looking at the end of the season thinking they could have done a lot better. But look, it was the Arabs who rounded off what was ultimately I was a very entertaining weekend of the Scottish Premiership. It's never a dull moment in Scottish football. That ends our recap of the weekend's action. But Robbie and Finlay have prepared a little game for you, a little England versus Scotland. Obviously, Robbie, you'll be representing England, and Finlay, you'll be representing Scotland. It's called Cap or No Cap. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Robbie, I'm just going to start with you. I'm going to name five English players, and you have to tell me if they've ever represented the English national team. And then Finlay, I'll do the same with you, but for Scotland. So
I'll
if
take it, I'll take it.
Robbie, if you're ready, I'll just kick right off. Do you understand? Do you understand the rules?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Right. So I'll start off with Robbie. Your first player is Jack Kobach.
Ooh, not capped.
Second player, Martin Kelly.
Capped.
Third player, Chris Sutton.
Capped.
Fourth player, Mark Noble.
Not capped.
And fifth player, Jimmy Bullard.
Ooh, not capped.
Okay. Finlay, on to you. You'll be representing Scotland, so we can name you five Scottish players. Your first player is Tony Watt.
Not capped.
Second player, Gary Mackay-Steven.
Capped.
Third player, Andy Halliday.
Not capped.
Fourth player, Chris Cadden.
Capped.
And your fifth player is Sir Alex Ferguson.
Oh, I think Sir Alex Ferguson has a retrospective cap. I don't think it technically counted, but it was awarded later on because I think he played for a select Scotland team.
So you're saying cap? Oh, yeah, he's
I'm
got a
going to
cap.
say cap. Yeah, I'm going to
Yeah.
say cap.
Well, I've got it done as Alex Ferguson does not have a cap, but it doesn't matter because you got one of yours wrong, where Robbie got all his right. So Robbie is number seven
Oh,
for
man.
England.
Yes, dude.
So Robbie, you answered correctly. Jack Colback's not been capped. Martin Kelly and Chris Sutton both have one cap each. Mark Noble famously wasn't in that Euro 2016 squad, and Jimmy Bullard doesn't have a cap, but he was called up to a few squads, I think. Finally, where you tripped up right from the start. Tony Watt has one cap, somewhere at his name. Gary Mackay-Steven has two. Andy Halliday has none. I thought you might have said cap because there was that sort of period with McLeish where he was handing out caps left, right, and centre.
No, I think I would have known. I think I kind of trolled the Wikipedias.
I
I'm surprised I
think
forgot about Tony Watt. I just felt that I thought it would be a kind of red herring, that kind of season at Celtic. But again, it just goes to show what a goal against Barcelona can do for you.
I was going to sign him for Partick Thistle and Football Manager, and it came up that he had a cap, so that kind of inspired that inspired this
That's
week's.
where the wealth of knowledge is built. It's like the old football managers. But since I haven't played it, I haven't bought it in a few years. All that information just started to dry up.
Chris Cadden got two in that sort of South America tour with McLeish, and then Alex Ferguson. I only knew that he never had a cap because I was running out of players and I just googled the best Scotland players to never have a cap, so he was one of them, so I put him down. But I'm
He was
glad you got
Rangers'
Tony Watt
record
then.
signing though, at the time, I think it was.
And then, but then I think things have kind of ended a bit
His
similarly
career
for
petered
different
out a little
reasons.
bit.
But
But remember that Jimmy Bullard, the one I knew, is because from that story where he kept warming up and he kept looking at Fabio Capello, hoping to be brought on for a cap, and then Fabio Capello had promised he'd bring him on and then forgot, or at least didn't, and then never brought him up again.
I'm sure there's a story where he like he was doing crossbar challenges or something. He was just, it's like, it might have been him or David
Yeah.
Bentley or something like that. It's like, just first day. Then, see when I was doing this as well, you remember Joe Lewis, who was the old Aberdeen goalkeeper?
Yeah.
He was in one of Fabio Capello's squads. He's not got a cap, but he was in
What?
there. I know, like, before the 2010 World Cup, I don't know who he was playing for. I had to
So
Google it.
if we went through this list, there would be some rogue call-ups.
And then he played up front for England under 21s as well because they had no more outfielders on the bench. So, but
I mean, Martin Kelly's a relatively rogue call-up in itself, isn't it? He was never a star-studded player, was he?
well, remember
Not
Dave
at all.
Nugent, one cap, one goal. One
Yeah. But yeah, that wraps up this weekend's episode of Scottish Football Covered. Be sure to follow us on all our social medias, and we'll be back with you next week. Thank you and goodbye.